Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Need a cold coffee with a bold flavor? Dunkin' Cold K-Cup pods were specially crafted for cold coffee. Brew over ice straight out of the Keurig coffee maker for smooth, delicious Dunkin' taste you know and love. Find your next Dunkin' Cold coffee in the roasted coffee aisle.
Good Monday morning. The long road to recovery underway in Florida.
And local leaders facing tough questions. Did evacuation orders come too late? It's October 3rd. This is Today. Picking up the pieces, search and rescue missions still unfolding across Florida this morning, 5 days after monster Hurricane Ian roared ashore.
What's your name? Rick. Rick, I'm going to get you out of here, all right?
Crews reaching survivors any way they can. The death toll climbing this morning, nearly 100 people. And the questions growing, should evacuations have been ordered sooner in one of the hardest hit counties? The mayor of Fort Myers Beach, our live guest, just ahead. Breaking overnight, gaining ground, Ukrainian forces recapturing more cities from Russian control, leading to new nuclear threats. The latest from the front lines just ahead. Back to the bench. Justices return to the Supreme Court today facing new protests over Roe v. Wade and a slate of hot-button cases that could impact the midterms. We're there live. Serial killer, a warning from police in California after five murders just miles apart.
The community's scared. It stops now.
This morning, the anxiety gripping several communities and the new surveillance video that could be a clue in the case. And today, exclusive, Katie Couric live in Studio 1A on her new mission to educate women and save lives after revealing her own breast cancer diagnosis.
I want to make sure that you all don't put off your mammograms.
The life-saving message she wants everyone to hear today, Monday, October 3rd, 2022.
From NBC News, this is Today with Savannah Guthrie and Hoda Kotb, live from Studio 1A in Rockefeller Plaza.
Hi, everybody. Good morning. Welcome to Today. Nice to have you with us on a Monday morning, first Monday in October. And we're really looking forward to speaking with Katie. She returns to Studio 1A once again on a mission.
Oh, we're so looking forward to that. It was so surprising to a lot of us to hear that she had a breast cancer diagnosis this summer. But she has got a message today that we all, I think, need to hear.
Yeah, and we want to check in on how she's feeling. We're going to begin, though, in hurricane-ravaged Florida. Rescues still underway this morning.
Despite the heroic efforts from emergency crews, the death toll continues to climb. There's also mounting concern over evacuations, whether everybody in the storm's path had enough official warning to get out of harm's way.
We're going to talk about that and more with the mayor of Fort Myers Beach, which was just devastated by that hurricane. But let's start this morning with NBC's Sam Brock. We spent the weekend surveying that damage. Sam, good morning.
Yes, Savannah, good morning. We are now 5 days removed from the hurricane's landfall. Rescue efforts right now still ongoing. I'm in Matlache this morning. This is the entry point to Pine Island just over my shoulder. Everything here is buckled. Look at this road and bridge. Layers of asphalt folded over each other here. That is going on as residents have put together a makeshift plank using metal aluminum ladders and also wood to get over to Pine Island so they can then walk another mile and a half. All of this right now as first responders are going by chopper and boat trying to rescue those in need with time of the essence.
In the aftermath of Hurricane Ian, round-the-clock rescues have been going on for days.
Rick, can we get you out of here, all right?
From the air and the water, first responders trying to help desperate residents. The death toll now approaching triple digits, nearly half of them in Lee County. Search and rescue teams combing islands cut off from the mainland, including Sanibel, Captiva, and Pine Island, looking for survivors. A chorus of questions surfacing about why Lee County didn't issue mandatory evacuations until Tuesday morning, 1 day before Ian hit. The sheriff blaming the storm's constantly shifting track.
There are indications that Lee County's comprehensive emergency management plan was ignored.
I'm going to cut you off before you go any further. We did what we had to do at the exact same time. I wouldn't have changed anything.
By Monday night, the National Hurricane Center warned areas in Lee County, including Fort Myers, were in danger of life-threatening storm surge. But the county didn't start ordering evacuations until the next morning, hours after neighboring Charlotte County put out its evacuation orders.
They're telling us that we need to evacuate. We don't have places to go. We have no cars to get there.
The storm rushed in. Much of the area, including Fort Myers Beach, now hardly recognizable. But it's hardly just these coastal communities that are suffering. Even after the storm passed, a levee breach in Sarasota County, threatening some 70 homes over the weekend. Officials telling us the levee is still compromised. But help is pouring in from all directions. Jose Andres' World Kitchen and other charities are in some of the hardest hit areas. A lack of water also impacting hospitals, forcing them to transfer patients, old and young, including NICU infants. For Tiffany Henning, a new mom of twins, the move was frightening.
Knowing that my baby needs help with breathing support and is dependent on running power, it was very scary.
The twins ultimately transferred by helicopter to a nearby hospital with power, and we're told they're doing well.
And some good news from Lee Health this morning. They inform us that conditions have improved considerably within the last 48 hours at their hospital's water pressure levels right now, normalizing this. As I'm told from crews here this morning right now, that they're going to be building this road again in the next 3 days. That, as President Biden is expected to tour this area on Wednesday. Savannah, back to you.
All right, Sam, thank you very much.
Joining us now is the mayor of Fort Myers Beach. Mayor Ray Murphy joins us. Your community, Mr. Mayor, is devastated. We're just devastated looking at the pictures. Are there rescue efforts still going on at this hour as we speak?
Well, good morning, ladies. Nice to see you both. There certainly are. The search and rescue teams are still covering the island. And that's the reason why we've actually closed it off to residents to this time, because they're not quite done with their search and rescue operations. We probably have a few more days of that, and then we can start allowing residents, hopefully, to return to the island and start sifting through the messes.
Mr. Mayor, I was reading about some folks who are on the island, maybe who rode out the storm, who are now trying to get off and having some trouble finding a shuttle. What's the plan for them today? Are you actively trying to get those who were left there off the island so that they can then, start to rebuild and wait until you guys have a chance to get services restored?
Yes. You know, the ones that are trying to get off, there are several opportunities for them to get off. There are the responders going up and down the island, getting them off. And there isn't a shuttle per se, but there are lots of impromptu shuttles happening constantly up and down the boulevard on the island.
Mayor, a lot of people are talking about evacuation orders and when they were ordered mandatory. I think some people need to hear a mandatory evacuation order before they leave. So at 5 p.m. Monday, the National Hurricane Center warned that Lee County was in danger of, quote, life-threatening storm surge. The county didn't start ordering evacuations until the next morning. That was hours after Charlotte County had done the same. Do you wish that your county and you guys had started those evacuation orders earlier?
Well, you know, I'm going to let the other people fight those fights right now. We're more concerned with the rescue operations that are under hand right now. Certainly in the optimum and best case situations, everybody wants the most warning they can get. But I'm not in a position right now to challenge those warnings or what have you. As I say, that's done up on the county level and the state level. And I'm going to let them fight that out right now. We've got much more work to do here on the ground that we're busy with, and I'll certainly be interested in hearing about the results of that at a future date. But really, ladies, this morning I'm not prepared to fight that battle.
Yeah, fair enough. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious. Did you feel like you would follow? It's up to you to follow their lead, those county mm-hmm. officials, or do you feel like you had the power to do anything for just your community?
No. We're completely reliant on their evacuation orders. We don't issue those orders down here. But lots of us locals that have been here for years and years and years. I mean, we know when it's time to go. And for those that don't go, and have suffered the consequences of that, I feel for them. I feel for them all over Southwest Florida, all over the Barrier Islands. But when it's time to go, you got to go.
Yeah. And just lastly, Mayor, do you imagine when you close your eyes, do you imagine your community being rebuilt the way it was when you see it down the road?
Oh, I most certainly do. You know, and everybody wants to do that. This is there's a lot of pain and anguish right now, and I'm trying to encourage everyone. We don't want to fall into any despair, but I can envision the beach, Fort Myers Beach, being so much better now. This is a tremendous opportunity to reinvent ourselves down here, and that's our plan, and we're going to do that. We're going to be back stronger and stronger as we move on into the future. So it's just watch us over the next few years. You're going to see a lot of changes down here.
Well, Mr. Mayor, those words will be quite a comfort to your community. I know you were quoting Winston Churchill, when you're going through hell, keep going.
Yeah,
so with
that's
you.
Exactly right.
We're with you all the way. Keep going. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, ladies.
All right, take care. And we turn now to Ukraine and a significant development there. Ukrainian forces have retaken control of several cities, including a key area in the east, just days after Vladimir Putin proclaimed it would belong to Russia forever. NBC's Aaron McLaughlin is on the ground for us inside Ukraine this morning. Aaron, good morning to you.
Good morning, Savannah. Overnight, Ukrainian forces retaking more territory, this time to the south. But with these battlefield gains comes uncertainty over what the Russian president could do next. This morning, Ukrainian forces pushing forward with their relentless counteroffensive, reclaiming two settlements in the south overnight, according to the Ukrainian president, bringing them closer to the Russian-occupied city of Kherson. This after raising the Ukrainian flag in a key transport hub in the east, opening the door to reclaiming more lost land in the Donbas region. Just days after the Russian president declared large chunks of Ukraine part of Russian territory forever, while accusing the West of trying to weaken and destroy his country. President Zelensky calling the stunning gains proof Putin's claims are a farce. Ukraine's battlefield momentum eliciting a dire threat from the leader of Chechnya, a Putin ally, calling for more drastic measures, including the use of low-yield nuclear weapons. Meanwhile, in the recently liberated village of Kamyanka, the Russian assault and occupation scarring the landscape.
Devastation as far as the eye can see. In fact, it looks like a hurricane, earthquake, and tornado struck this village all at once, and there's hardly anyone left.
Ukrainian First Lady Olena Zelenska on 60 Minutes Sunday, urging the world to stay focused on the war and its impact on her country's children.
Ukraine's children went to school this year, and the first thing they learned is where the bomb shelter is, how to get there, and what to do in case a missile strikes. We will fight. We will not give our children up. I don't know how we can forgive this. I don't think we will.
On Sunday, 9 of the 30 NATO member states issued a joint statement calling for a pathway to membership of the alliance for Ukraine, as well as additional military aid. This just days after President Zelensky applied for NATO membership on behalf of his country. Savannah.
All right. Aaron McLaughlin in Ukraine for us. Thank you, Aaron.
Now, Washington, where all eyes are on the Supreme Court this morning, opening its new term with a new justice, a packed agenda, and lingering fallout from the decision to overturn Roe v. Wade. NBC's Kelly O'Donnell is joining us there from the court. Kelly, this is a really historic day. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson sitting on the bench, and she's actually hearing a case for the first time. What do we expect today?
Good morning, Hoda. For the first time, the 9 justices of the Supreme Court include 4 women and the first Black woman with Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, who was welcomed here Friday in a special ceremony, taking the oath and taking her seat on the bench. President Biden attended that ceremony, and the court put out a photo of the 9 justices appearing together for the very first time, and the court will look like that for the term ahead. The supermajority of conservatives, 6 of them, 3 liberals. So Justice Jackson does not change the ideological makeup of the court as it gets its work underway today and she hears her first case. They'll be dealing with issues that involve race and voting rights and gay rights in America. They'll deal with an issue
of race in college admissions, with affirmative action involving cases with Harvard and the University of North Carolina. They'll look at the electoral map in Alabama and examine whether changes made there have made it harder for Black voters to have the same weight. They'll also look at a case in Colorado where a web designer does not want to provide creative services for gay weddings, citing freedom of speech. So it gives you a sense of how these cases really reflect a lot of American life and will also affect the culture wars in our country.
Well, Kelly, we've got midterms coming up. Do you expect to see an impact on the midterms from things like Roe v. Wade being overturned?
Well, after that blockbuster term that ended in June with abortion rights and the constitutional protection, they're going away. Democrats certainly believe that will motivate their voters to turn out and to elect more Democrats who could potentially put laws in effect to protect abortion rights. Apart from the court, Republicans see things like the economy and inflation as ways that they could do well in the midterm. So some of it will be influenced by the court, some with larger issues. But the court is a vital place in American life, and it will be another term with really momentous and consequential decisions. Hoda?
Kelly, thank you. You made Pete Williams proud, by the way. Good job. Thanks, Kel.
Thank you.
Quarter after, we got Craig joining us. Good morning.
Hey,
Craig.
Savannah, Hoda, good morning. Good morning to you as well. Changes to the NFL's concussion protocol are expected in the coming days as the league and its Players Association are responding to renewed concerns about head injuries after those violent hits to the Miami Dolphins star quarterback just days apart. NBC's Stephanie Gosk has been following this story. Steph, good morning.
Hey, Craig, good morning. It's unclear when Tua Tagovailoa will play for the Dolphins again after being slammed to the turf twice in separate games last week. But those sacks are having an impact beyond the field. The doctor who treated him after the first hit has been fired, and the concussion rules could be changing.
This morning, repercussions after Miami Dolphins quarterback Tua Tagovailoa appeared to sustain two head injuries just days apart. One of the doctors who cleared Tua to play has been fired.
I expect the highest level of medical expertise. And when we make decisions to terminate people, it's in respect to all of those considerations.
The NFL is reviewing safety guidelines and is expected to update concussion protocols. The league and the league's Players Association will reportedly interview Tua as part of their probe into what went wrong, according to ESPN, citing anonymous sources.
What's important is that we get this right, and if we need to make a change and make things better, that carries us forward and helps us do a better job.
The investigation coming after two injuries last week. First, this hard hit during a game against the Buffalo Bills. Tua returned later that game, and 4 days later was back on the field and sacked again. This time the QB lay motionless for over 7 minutes before being taken to the hospital for evaluation. While Miami's head coach Mike McDaniel says concussion protocols were followed, the handling of Tua's injuries questioned ahead of NBC's Sunday Night Football. And earlier, former NFL coach Rex Ryan weighing in.
Would you put your son back in that game? No way in hell I put my son back in that game. No way in hell. And you know what? No way in hell I put somebody else's son back out there either. Yeah. This is an epic fail.
It highlights the intense pressure for professional athletes to play no matter what. Cardinals defensive end J.J. Watt taking the field Sunday just days after he says he went into atrial fibrillation. Watt tweeted he had his heart shocked back into rhythm on Thursday.
Once my heart was reset, they said, you're fine if you feel comfortable.
The NFL's chief medical officer says any player with health concerns is evaluated by the team and independent consultants before playing.
Miami's next game is against the New York Jets next Sunday, most likely without Tua on the field. One thing worth noting, in the 24 hours after Tua's injury against the Bills, the Buffalo Times reports fans gave more than $1,000 in donations to his foundation, supporting youth initiatives, health and wellness, and other charitable causes.
Wow. Hearing Rex Ryan say, would you put your son in, or I wouldn't put my son in, was real telling. Yeah.
All right.
Thank you, Steph.
Thanks, Steph.
You're welcome.
7:19, the first check of the weather, Mr. Roker.
Yay.
Welcome back. How you feeling?
I'm feeling fine. Thanks to all of you who have sent well wishes. We appreciate it. Everybody's fine. And so we're all moving forward. Unfortunately, we can't get rid of Ian, the remnants of this thing, plaguing now the northeast parts of New England. We've got, in fact, this rotation coming in, breezy, wet, really moist air, and it's a little on the raw side. We've got the risk for 16 million people, low-lying flooding in those areas. We're looking for water about 1 to 3 feet above ground level from the Cape all the way up into the Northeast. This low pressure off the Delmarva Peninsula, some coastal winds up to 60 miles per hour. This wind-driven rain, some places, Atlantic City, almost 4 inches of rain in the last 24 hours. We're talking, again, upwards of 3 inches before it's all over. And we're watching a couple of areas of development back down through the Atlantic. Chance of formation right off the African coast. We're not really that worried about this one. But this system they're developing, we could see this develop in the next 5 days. Tropical depression could form. So we're going to continue to watch that. And that's your latest weather. Guys?
Did we mention how much we missed you?
Oh, I missed you guys, too. And Bill Cairns and the entire NBC News Climate Unit just does an amazing job during Ian.
Well, as they said, you set up. You have great producers. Just the whole system.
Well, we're happy you're back. Well,
it's Al's house, and we're happy to have you back home.
Thank you.
Cool. Coming up, speaking of our house, our dear friend Katie Couric is right here where she belongs in Studio 1A.
New couch.
New couch, Katie, just
love
for you.
Love what you've done to the place.
Katie just revealed she had a breast cancer diagnosis, and she is on a mission, man.
Yeah, we are going to talk to her about how she's feeling, the positive impact her story is already having on other women. We'll talk about that and more, but first, this is Today on NBC.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/today. Just go to Indeed.com/today right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/today. Conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Now, 7:30, it's a Monday morning. It's the third day of October, 2022. Happy you're waking up with us. Happy for everybody who showed up, bundled up. We got some New Orleans folks in the house as usual. It's good to see everybody.
It is getting to be bundle-up season.
Yes, it is.
A little bit. Let's get your headlines. 7:30, Monday morning. In Northern California, there is growing anxiety this morning over a possible serial killer on the loose. Stockton police say 5 men were shot and killed between July and late September, and those crimes are believed to be connected. Officials say this newly released image pulled from video surveillance could be a person of interest in the case. Rewards totaling $85,000 are being offered for information leading to an arrest.
Sasheen Littlefeather, the activist who made history in 1973 by declining Marlon Brando's Oscar on his behalf, died yesterday. Littlefeather told the audience Brando would not accept his Best Actor award for The Godfather due to the treatment of Native Americans in the film industry. Her speech was met with both boos and applause. This past June, the Academy apologized to her for her treatment at the Oscars that night. Sasheen Littlefeather was 75 years old. Meantime, we are marking the start of Breast Cancer Awareness Month with a story that hits close to home.
Yeah, our friend Katie Couric is with us. She has long been a cancer advocate, using her platform, including her time here at Today, to inform and educate the public. Well, now she's gone from cancer advocate to cancer survivor. Last week, in a personal essay on the Katie Couric Media website, she wrote, "June 21st was the first day of summer, my 8th wedding anniversary, and the day I found out I had breast cancer." Like more than a third of women, Katie was not up to date on her annual screening, writing, "Had the pandemic given me a skewed sense of time? Had it messed with my memory?" 6 months overdue, Katie went in for a mammogram and a breast ultrasound. Noting something suspicious in her left breast, her doctor did a biopsy, and it was cancer. After having a lumpectomy and 15 days of radiation, Katie is sharing her story to educate others and once again save lives. In 2000, 2 years after her husband, Jay Monahan, died of colon cancer, Katie aired her own colonoscopy right here on Today. As a result, there was a 20% increase in screenings, with the University of Michigan dubbed the Couric effect.
Katie, that smile right here, please.
Now, she's on a mission again. And she's right here with us. Hi, Katie. It's so good to see you.
Look at us all in pink.
We are. Yeah. We got the memo. It is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And the first question has to be how you're feeling. How are you doing?
I'm feeling great. I'm just getting over a cold. That's why I wouldn't give you all a hug this morning to protect you. But I'm feeling just fine. You know, I finished radiation last week. They said it made you tired. I was actually not too tired from it. I had a lumpectomy in July. And my next stop, I go on something called aromatase inhibitors, which suppress estrogen because I have a hormone receptor positive, HER2 new negative tumor that they removed when I had my lumpectomy. But I just feel super lucky that it was diagnosed when it was, that I went, even though I was late, that I went when I did.
Can you take us back? Because I think, I mean, you are a cancer advocate, obviously, but it's a whole different ball game when you go in. You think you missed your mammogram by 6 months, which is probably like most people at home right now.
Yeah.
So you went in for your checkup. Tell us about that moment.
Well, I went in with my phone camera, and I was going to share it with my followers and people who read my newsletter and go to the website to say, don't forget. Yeah. I forgot. Yeah. I don't want you all to. So when my breast radiologist, Susan Drossman, said, can you turn off your phone? I was like, uh-oh, what does that mean? And she said, I think there's something we really need to biopsy, and I want to do it today. So I thought, oh, my God, you must be kidding me. And then when I found out the next day she called me, I was pretty stunned. And I think those words, it's cancerous or you have cancer, do stop you in your tracks. But she told me it was treatable. We needed to have a plan. Mm-hmm. So I went from feeling shocked to not that shocked, given my family's history, and to relieved, because my exposure to cancer with Jay and Emily and my mother-in-law, Carol Monahan, you know, they were all advanced and the prognosis was really tough. So I felt so grateful, honestly. And that's why I am so thrilled to be able to talk to you all about the importance of screening. And I know, Hoda, you know about that, because Hoda and I had, you know, you have or had the same kind of tumor I had when you were in your 40s.
When you talk about early detection, it was so funny because when I was diagnosed here, I remember I sat with Corvo, David Corvo, and I told him what had happened. And he said, I'm going to tell you something. I said, okay. He said, I know a lot of friends who have breast cancer and they all have one thing in common. And I said, what's that? He said, they're still here. And that was about, just like for you and for me too, once you get the early detection, some of it, then it just becomes, now it's medical.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. And there have been so many strides made.
Yeah.
As you said, a third of all women, I didn't even know that number, didn't get screened during COVID. And a lot of screening places shut down. I think the cadence of our lives changed. And I think we just got off track. And that happened to me as well.
Before we get into some of the particulars, because I know you are a woman on a mission and you have a really important message. I immediately thought of Carrie and Ellie, your daughters. They're in their 20s now.
Yeah,
I
Ellie's think. 31, if you can believe it.
Oh, my gosh.
But they have, you know, they experienced so much loss at a young age. You know, their father, their grandmother, their aunt. And I'm sure that was a hard call to make, even knowing that you had a really good prognosis.
Yeah, I was nervous about it. I waited a few days so I could process it and really understand what we were dealing with. And I FaceTime each of them. And Ellie's in L.A. and Carrie never calls me back. So I basically had to FaceTime both of them. She's here in New York. And I told them, but I was very reassuring. Mm-hmm. But I saw on their faces, you know, it's just hard to deliver that news no matter how you do it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I assured them that I was going to be fine. And Carrie came with me when mm-hmm. I got my lumpectomy. When I was being wheeled into the operating room, she was singing The Arms of an Angel.
Aww.
Oh, my God. No, she's so funny. But anyway, but they've been incredibly supportive. And of course, I was worried about that. But again, just so grateful that they caught it early enough so it could be treated. And by the way, yeah. you know, even when it's a later stage than mine, I'm stage 1A, there's so many treatments available and a lot of women are living with breast cancer, but we need to do better. We need to come up with better treatments and we need to get more women screened. I was surprised y'all, only 70% of women actually get breast cancer screening.
Wow.
And that number went down to 65% during the pandemic, but I think it's probably went even lower.
Here's a weird thing that we just saw on the American Cancer Society website. It says, and I think we have a graphic, women 55 and over should switch to mammograms every 2 years. They're kind of giving you that window. You don't need to go each year. You can go every two.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the recommendations have been all over the map. I mean, I'm not a doctor and I'm trying not to play one on TV, but you know, I think people should go every year. You should talk to your doctor. I think women have to advocate for their own health. And that's why I'm so, you know, so excited to be able to talk about dense breasts mm-hmm. in particular.
I wanted to ask you about that because you were someone that you learned you have dense breasts. First of all, what does that mean? Yeah. I thought I knew. I just asked you. You're like, no, that's not it. Yeah. And what does that mean in terms of mm-hmm. the kind of screening you need?
Well, this is my main message. So thank you for asking that. It's 45 to 50% of women in this country have what are considered dense breasts. This is not something you can tell by feeling mm-hmm. your breasts. If your breasts are lumpy, it doesn't necessarily mean you have dense breasts. It's mm-hmm. indicated on a mammogram. Mm-hmm. So you have to ask your radiologist, or your radiologist ideally should be telling you you have dense mm-hmm. breasts. And then you often need secondary screening. So my radiologist compared it to trying to find snowballs in a field of snow. Yeah. I got a 3D mammogram, which is definitely superior to standard mammograms. And my breast radiologist, Susan Drossman, said it was made it much easier for her to see it. But it was key to get a breast ultrasound to confirm that I had a tumor that needed to be biopsied. Mm-hmm. And a lot of women don't know this. 38 states require doctors to say, hey, Hoda, you have dense breasts, but your mammogram is fine. So what are you supposed to do with that information? Yeah. You don't necessarily know you need additional screening.
And by the way, insurance doesn't necessarily pay for that additional ultrasound
screening. So two issues. Yeah. First, with the notification, Savannah. So the FDA said the language needs to change. All states mm-hmm. need to require notification with much more specificity about what you're supposed to do with that information. Mm-hmm. And then you're right, only 14 states and the district require insurance to pay some or all of breast ultrasound screening for women with dense breasts. And often the reimbursement is very mm-hmm. small. So I've been working with Congressman Rosa DeLauro of Connecticut, and she's introducing legislation this month that would require insurance companies to cover no cost on the patient breast ultrasounds for women who have dense breasts, because it's criminal. All these breast cancer diagnosis mm-hmm. would happen much earlier mm-hmm. if, in fact, women with dense mm-hmm. breasts had breast ultrasounds.
Wow. You've already spoken to the congresswoman that's already on the move.
Yeah.
It's not surprising us in the least.
Guys, she's on a mission, so just go ahead and do what she asks.
But I just really want women to get screened. Yes. Don't put it off. Yes. I've heard from so many who said, your story made me make my appointment.
Yes. Yep.
But also, if you have dense breasts, find out what more you need to do.
Will your kids do any genetic testing? Do you want them to?
Yes. Well, Ellie already has.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And what's also, I'm so glad you asked me this too, because I've been, learning and reporting on this myself. So basically, you know, used to look for the BRCA gene, BRCA1 or BRCA2, which you could increase your risk of breast cancer up to 80%. But the panel has increased to almost 30, or I think more than 30 gene mutations that give you a slightly higher risk, sometimes as high as 40% higher for breast cancer. Genetic testing has gone into the mainstream. Uh-huh. Insurance companies cover it, and it really is a great tool to help you understand what you need to do vis-a-vis screening and how often you need to do it. And you should be having a conversation with your healthcare provider about breast cancer as early as 25, just to start the conversation. And Black women have a 40% higher mortality rate. So if you're Black or you have Ashkenazi Jew heritage, you should start discussing it at age 30 because it might change your screening protocol.
Well, Katie, you had such an impact earlier in your career after Jay's passing, and I believe you'll have that impact again.
Well, I
hope
so.
We have our homework cut out for us. I did make my appointment
good.
After hearing about
good.
You last week.
Good, good. I'm so glad. Yeah. I'm so glad because I really, I just want to share what I've learned with other women and hopefully keep them healthy and happy.
Well, we love you, Katie. We're happy.
Well, thank you. I feel like
I
feel like my little textbook is going in here. But I've really studied this, and I have the facts to back it up. Cool. But thank you for having me.
Thank you, Katie. We adore
you. Delighted to have you, and looking so good and feeling well.
Thank you. Important. I'm getting there. Still a little sniffly, but I'm better.
We might hug you anyway. Yeah. Craig, over to you.
Thank you, Katie. Thank you. Thank you. Still ahead here on a Monday morning. Some more news you can use with Halloween on the way and record spending expected. We've got some advice for saving money without skimping on your family celebrations. But first, these messages.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
It's time to breathe easier this allergy season with Breathe Right Nasal Strips. With instant nasal congestion relief for up to 12 hours, you can spend your time on your terms, not on your noses. Stuffy nose from outdoor allergens? No problem. We got you. Allergy season just turned into stripping season. Instant relief from nasal congestion anytime, anywhere. Need more convincing? Click the banner below and get a free sample. Breathe right. Get your strip on. Use as directed.
And welcome back. Time now for another check of the forecast. How are we looking, Mr. Rook?
Well, all in all, we've got a fairly quiet day out there. Again, remnants of Ian off the northeast coast, the Delmarva Peninsula. So we're watching some heavy rain there. Sunny and mild from the Gulf Coast all the way up into the Great Lakes. We do see some showers and more monsoonal moisture coming into the southwest. So we're going to be watching that sunshine up and down the west coast. And that is your latest weather.
All right, Mr. Roker, thank you, thank you. Coming up on a Monday, could solar panels, could that be the best answer to high electricity bills, especially with the cold of winter on its way?
Well, Vicky Nguyen will be here to walk us through the process of having them installed, how soon you could expect to save, too. But first, these messages.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters. Both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.